Blog Talk Radio.
And greetings, Mad Hotep. Welcome to another segment of New Day, Resurrection, and Liberation. My name is Empress Chi, and as usual, we are always very pleased to be able to be with you live and in living color. Tonight's program is going to focus on, of course, the continuation of the Witch Hunt Genocide 21 campaign. And with that, we are on the road. We are right now in Detroit, getting ready to go into Chicago for tomorrow. And, of course, to now really bring forward the Witch Hunt Genocide 21 in such a way that we are connecting on the grassroots level to really begin to move this project forward in the way that is necessary and in the way that we said that we would. We, again, today began to formulate some of the ideas, concepts, strategies that we have been talking about, which, of course, includes gentrification. We have 21 areas that we have begun to focus on initially. And when we talk about crimes against humanity, of course, the genocide acts of this government against African people in this country, of course, is not something that many don't know about. In fact, countries know about it, but the thing is, we have not formulated it to the degree that we really need to. Now, that's not to say that a tremendous amount of work has, of course, been done over the years. In fact, this year will mark the 70th year commemoration of Paul Robeson, William Patterson taking the We Charge Genocide petition in 1951 to the United Nations and to Paris, France. Paul Robeson, of course, took it to the United Nations in New York, and, of course, William Patterson took it to Paris, France. Now, that was 70 years ago, and they did an incredible job to document hundreds of our people being murdered, beaten, just brutalized, not just by police, by the way. In fact, many of it wasn't by police. It was by the citizenry, the white communities all over the country. And again, they documented hundreds at a time when there was no Facebook, no internet, none of that stuff. But we have to, of course, examine and look very closely to see what about now? What is happening now? And who's standing up now? And why do something that we can continue to do things in the same manner? Meaning, yep, we must do the rallies. Yep, we must do the marches. Excuse me. Yep, we must do all those things. But we must also do some other things. And with that said, that's what the Recharge Genocide 21 project is about, doing what has been done in terms of recognizing, but also continuing the work and advancing in it, and, I dare say, moving towards victories, real victories. So one of the things that has not been presented in the past with Recharge Genocide different initiatives, and again, ours is Recharge Genocide 21, and this is how you can differentiate us from others, particularly others that we don't necessarily want to be connected to in that kind of way, even though, again, you know, people can do whatever they want to do the way that they want to do it, but that doesn't mean that you want to be connected to that in that manner. Well, we too have taken that position. There are other Recharge Genocide initiatives or programs that have been in effect over the years. And so, you know, we'll make it very clear which ones we either support or have participated in or are, you know, looking to continue the vision and the work. But then there are a few that we don't really have anything to do with at all. One of the things that we have to make very clear to people is that we are, meaning the Recharge Genocide 21 is specifically for and about black people, people of African descent, people who literally are not afraid of being called black, not afraid of being called African. We are not talking about people of color. That's not who we're representing. And it is our intent to indeed identify ourselves based on the fact that we are, in fact, next year going to have what we call a pre-plebiscite session. Now, this, again, has not been something that has been done before, at least not to this degree. And so to have a national pre-plebiscite session with the intent to hold an actual plebiscite at some point when we're ready, but at least to begin the process, at least to begin setting things up so that we can literally define ourselves, name ourselves. You know, many are familiar with Kuji Chandelier, self-determination. This is very, very important, especially when you are striving to do things that is not only going to be international, but that is also going to free us, at least to a greater extent. And if you think that that's not like really something that we need to be focusing on today, and something that is going to be so mandatory in the future, then continue to think that way. But for those who get it, well, we will have something for you to work from. And this is, again, going to be very important because people talk a lot about what we should do, what we could do, what we need to do, how we what has happened just in this past week. Of course, it's cumulative. It has been going on for quite a while. But to now see someone who gets it, shall I say, not that she didn't get it before. As you all know, she's been on our program several times. But to hear what she has to say now, it's kind of a little different. And you know, years ago, Mumi Abu-Jamal wrote an article about Sister Pam Africa, and he called her an up-and-coming revolutionary. Now, note, this was before Sister Pam Africa was Sister Pam Africa, really. At least not in the same way we know her. But Mumia, and again, this was years ago, because Mumia was not incarcerated at the time. He was, you know, on the street with us, writing, you know, having his gigs at different radio and newspapers. But the point being, he recognized in her a certain spirit. He recognized that she was really going to be correct. Needless to say, my point is that with Sister Tawanda Jones, let me tell you, you're going to see and hear, I think, right before your eyes, the development of, I won't say revolutionary, because I'm very careful with that word. You don't want to give that label to people and have this government to utilize it in a way that could be disadvantageous. But I can tell you this, we use the word evolutionary. And I think, again, what you're going to see for the future, not that you haven't already, but even to a greater extent, you're going to see Sister Tawanda Jones evolve and become a evolutionary, or for some, we also use the word solutionary. So we're going to talk with Sister Tawanda very shortly, and again, she's going to share with you some of the things that are going on in Baltimore that is really more than the norm, which issue an indication that folks that are serious have to step it up some, because the system now is stepping up its game. We're going to also talk with Sister Bianca. Sister Bianca, and I'm not sure if her last name is Taylor. I got to check that again, but because we just been calling her Sister Bianca. She's going to be joining us shortly. She is the aunt of Sister Tawanda. I'm sorry, Sister Bianca. Bianca? No, Brianna Taylor. Okay. That's who we're going to talk with shortly. You know, as I'm thinking about all of these things, I'm really very clear about some other things, and that is, again, you don't hear Sister Brianna Taylor's name anymore. And so, you know, we're going to talk about that. Why is it, again, when it comes to our women and girls, it doesn't seem to carry the same kind of weight, the same kind of importance? And we're going to prove that that's true. And by the way, For men's groups and organizations, I can tell you that starting now, so it's already in effect, we're going to start requesting from brothers, the brothers who have groups, organizations in our communities nationwide, particularly the ones who claim or talk about being anti-violence, or either getting programs about anti-violence and all that. Well, we declare May the 7th as a day of awareness nationwide and a day of action to deal with the issue of violence and abuse of our women and girls. On May the 7th, Saturday of 2022, we are expecting all over the U.S. something in our communities nationwide. And we're going to see who stands up and do this. And if you don't think it's not something that's needed, then that's fine. But if you do, I can tell you now that the time has come to do something. And you will now have that opportunity, because starting next week, we'll start organizing with Zoom calls, with other kinds of conference calls and so on, to organize in every Black community nationwide on Saturday, May 7th. Enough is enough. And we also say no more. No more rape,
traffic, sex trafficking, murder, molestation, the various things that we know are going on in our community, kidnapping and so forth. And we do have a plan of action. So again, in a few moments, we're going to talk with Tawanda Jones. For those of you who are not convinced yet that these are some of the things that we need to do and are going to do, again, I'm really, really, really proud of my sister to see and to feel how she is growing and developing, as Mumia Abu-Jamal did when he saw Pan Africa. He saw very clearly that she was definitely going to be a powerhouse. And again, he was right. And again, we see the same thing or something similar with Sister Tawanda Jones. And what I mean by that is, you know, there's not many people that you know will get your back. A lot of people, again, will talk a lot of stuff, but when it comes to really knowing that you have that kind of love and support, it's rare nowadays, particularly to the degree of necessity, to the degree of standing up, doing the right thing. Well, we're going to kind of bottle this stuff and put it in a format where it can be duplicated or at least tapped into. So those are some of the things you're going to see us do as we get ready for the MWM25, which, of course, is next year. We will commemorate 25 straight, yes, I said straight, years of continual work, commitment. But now it's about building, community building, society building, institution building, and nation building. Just as we hope that you will become a member if you aren't already. Brothers as well, with our brothers in support, we are bringing forward the Global AFCOM Village Network and Society. And again, we're going to begin to give you more information about all of those things because we hope that folks will get in where they fit in or not. Either way, we're going to move forward. No more waiting for folks to do things, not asking, not expecting, but we do plan to move forward and we shall. So with that said, we're going to get ready to bring in Sister Tawanda Jones to share with you, again, some of what's going on in Baltimore in this, just in this past week. And you know what, family, was so very interesting. If you notice, there's a few cities, if you see a certain type of trend, as they say, in other realms, you can best believe that 9 times out of 10 is coming your way in some kind of way, shape, or form, because that's how the system functions. And so with the murders, I think Baltimore is now up to 300. A few weeks ago, we shared an article with you telling you how the murder rate of black women in Philadelphia is like, it's unbelievable. I'm going to give you the statistics very shortly to begin to demonstrate to a greater extent that what we're talking about is not only real, but even other people are talking about it. People that look like us are noticing or mentioning it. And, of course, they would. But more importantly, what are we going to do? Before we bring in Sister Tawanda, I want to remind you again, we will be in Chicago tomorrow at 5 o'clock Central Time, 6 o'clock Eastern Time. We will be doing a Zoom. Tomorrow we will have Brother Justin Blake with us. Of course, he is the uncle of Brother Jacob Blake. And we used to say he's going to give a powerful report and presentation on what happened in Kenosha this past week. He's going to give it to us from a vantage point, though, as it pertains to not only the community level, but certainly, of course, from the family level. So he's going to share some information about, some things that, will provide some insight. Also tomorrow, we're going to have Chairman Fred Hampton Jr. with us. And again, we're going to be focusing on some of the 21 areas of genocide And again, we're talking about COINTELPRO, gentrification, environmental racism, which is one of the topics we've covered today, given the fact that we were in Detroit. Of course, gentrification and environmental racism. Would you get to know and understand what happened in Flint, you will have to know that it kind of generated out of Detroit. So while folks focus on Flint, and they should, because that's where the actual contamination and illness and so forth occurred to a greater extent, but it was as a result of decisions that was made in Detroit. So people have got to get a better understanding. And lastly, we're going to bring in Sister Tawanda. We also have to look at now with the environmental racism, the issue not just of water, but also air. Because I can tell you, on our way to Detroit, we passed through an area right outside of Pittsburgh that if you did not have a mask on, you wish that you did. That's how bad the air was just traveling through that city. Can you imagine what it's like living there? And, of course, in other cities. But we're going to talk more about that a little later. The point being, as we talked about the various issues that are affecting us as a people, I'm always looking for what are we going to do about it? What's our plan of action? Well, the Recharge Genocide 21, we have one. So you have to start asking people around you or people that say things I'll do now, what is your plan? If we don't begin to hold folks accountable in that kind of way, then we're playing games. And we're playing the kind of game that is deadly. Anyway, let's go to our live room and let's talk with our sister, Tawanda Jones. And really, again, get to the nitty-gritty. Again, we're going to share reports, information, but we're going to also provide some of what we're going to do about it. So without further ado, let's go to our live line and talk with our sister, Tawanda Jones. Hey, sis, how you be tonight?
Hey, sis, how are you?
Wonderful, wonderful, as I always say. As long as we can continue to do what we do, continue to fight back, continue to resist, we're going to always be okay.
Absolutely. So you're sounding really low on my end, and I done, like, reconnected, like, several times. So I think they got my phone rigged up. But I'm hearing you really low, so I don't know how I sound to you, but you definitely sound kind of low on my end. But it's always a pleasure to hear this voice. Yeah.
Okay, well, listen, you go ahead and talk. I'm going to try to adjust whatever is going on. But listen, thank you for taking the time to join us tonight. And, again, I'm going to turn the mic over to you, and you just go ahead and jump in, and I'm going to try to see if I can make the volume a little better.
Okay, well, thank you, and thank you. Just for being a strong Black African-American queen that you are and just taking all of our issues seriously and just having this beautiful platform, you know, that we all can connect and not just connect but really seriously solve what's going on. Because at the end of the day, nobody's coming to save us, and it is right. What it is. But I'm just really, like, I have a heavy heart. Like, I have been eating all day long because, like, I'm so passionate about, you know, everything that's going on in my city, and it's just heartbreaking, and it's kind of depressing that every time I turn on the news, you're hearing about all these multiple shootings back to back and women. And just to kind of update you, like, I don't even know where to begin, but what I will begin with is that it was an elderly grandmother, Mrs. Evelyn Player, and my heart goes out to her, and I've been praying, but for you to have your life actually taken inside of a church that you volunteered, that you served, and, you know, was a part of that church for over 50 years, and you go to church and you literally are there volunteering, like, to let some maintenance men in, things like that. And she called her daughter, and this happened this week, by the way, but she actually called her daughter around 6 o'clock in the morning to say, hey, you know, I made it here, you know, I'm at work or whatever, I'm here, you know, everything's good, I'll talk to you, I love you type of thing. And within an hour later, she's dead. She's killed inside of a church. They found her in the bathroom, stabbed up, like, horrible. Like, but and we know that crimes are committed inside of a church. When we saw what Dylan Roof did when his, you know, his statistic tale went in church and gunned down people after he prayed, black people, as he prayed with them and prayed on them. It's just horrible. But after a while, it starts doing something to your mind. Because, and then literally, too, also, we had a 13-year-old baby girl just gunned down outside of a recreation center. Like, so many teenagers and girls and babies, it's just too much. It's just like, it's overwhelming. Like, you know, when I called you the other day, I was like on fire because I'm looking at how the media puts out information, you know, and literally we had a homicidal cop, pretty much, former cop, and I'll give you guys this story, and it was just crazy, and his name was, he was a former cop named Robert, and pretty much what happened, him and his girlfriend, and she was a former cop as well, her name was Tia, but long story short, they actually went to the home of his, you know, ex and kidnapped their two beautiful daughters, kidnapped them by gunpoint, all this, you know, took her vehicle. So now you got an abduction of children. Now you got them taking the mother of the children's vehicle with the babies inside. And then it gets worse than that. Like, literally, they take these babies from Pennsylvania or whatever, and long story short, right, they wind up back in Maryland. But they're doing all this stuff to the point that they actually wind up robbing another guy with the babies in the car, you know, and then wind up carjacking. It was just so much, like, you couldn't, like, Hollywood couldn't make this stuff up. It was horrific. Wow. And the fact that you do all this stuff and we not hear about it as it's unfolding, you get what I'm saying? Like, let this would have been anybody else doing this type of stuff, you would have been repeatedly hearing about it all day long. But for them to downplay it, and then literally, you know, now the news unfolded, and it was crazy because the car wound up crashing, and then we're like getting bits and pieces of it. Then they said, you know, three of them were found dead, and so we were having hope that one of the baby girls that got, you know, flown to the hospital, she was going to survive, but she wound up dying shortly later after being transported to the hospital. But the fact now I'm learning the twist is because at first I was under the assumption that he actually killed, you know, the girlfriend or whatever, that's the ex-police officer as well, and himself, and then took the baby lives and then wound up ultimately taking his life. But now I'm hearing a twist that it sounds like she killed all of them and then killed herself. It's sick, man. It's like, right, are you kidding me? It's just, like, horrific. Like, you cannot make this stuff up. It's like, mind-blowing. It's like, and then we're in a city that all they do is talk about it, and you don't do anything else but just talk,
right,
and hear about
that's
it.
Right.
And it's pretty much, like, to the point that it's almost controlling our minds, to the point that if you are not affected by this, hearing about this horrible stuff, like, something's wrong with you. So they pretty much damage your whole mind and, you know, have you all messed up, and then you just step back and just wait. Like, I'm to the point, and everybody know I've been peaceful with these whole going on 9 years of constantly fighting for my brother. You get what I'm saying?
Yes.
Like, just fighting, and not just for my brother Tyrone West that was executed in broad daylight, and the first officer to kill my brother was Ruiz, Jorge Bernardo Ruiz, from the Gun Trace Task Force and the so-called elite unit that was going around robbing, killing, doing what I just described to you that just happened, and we're supposed to be comfortable in the end of our seats and think about, oh, you know, that they're, you know, this is not going on anymore, or to the point that they're making stuff that is unacceptable seem like we're supposed to get it. And then all this stuff, and then if you look at the stuff and the way history is repeating itself, we just came up on when Detective Souter, he was actually killed on November the 16th, right? He was actually executed right before he was supposed to testify, you know what I mean, testify, and then they put out a ransom amount of money stating that, you know, they were looking for a black suspect and all that. When they know that they put a hit out on him, switched partners on him and everything, got him killed. But the interesting part, and I want everybody to take special notes, there's a movie coming out on HBO. So make sure you guys tune into it. But the interesting part that where it starts at, or part of, I don't know exactly where it started at, because they're like, they go to where Freddie Gray was murdered at and everything. Mm-hmm. But one of the streets that they that was interesting to me that they picked up on, and that was the block that my brother was murdered at. The block my brother was murdered at. One of the witness hit me up and sent me on social media the flyer and was like, to wonder, this is really interesting that, you know, where your brother got murdered at, they're actually going to be filming outside of there tomorrow or whatever. And I'm like, wow. But, like, you can't make this stuff up. It's just like, it's just way too much. It's way too much.
Yep. And sis, one of the things that you mentioned also that I have to recap, and that is there was a murder of a young five-year-old, or the death of a young five-year-old. You know, again, these are reports that we're getting a lot. And so, of course, in talking with you over the past year, we reported on numerous occasions murders and missing and so forth. So just so you know, we're getting ready to request meetings with the mayor there, the mayor in Washington, D.C., the mayor in Atlanta, because all of these are black mayors. But yet we're not hearing about any task forces or any kind of special anything to address the situation.
And then not only did I report to you guys about, I didn't get to tell them at night about the five-year-old that they, you know, that was pretty much, they saw suspected abuse on them, on the pretty much baby body, because they saw bruises on the baby face. But the fact that we had, within like a couple months ago, we had four different children, siblings, killed at the hands of people that's supposed to have been, you know, taking care of them. And our babies are the most vulnerable. The vulnerable babies and our senior citizens are the most vulnerable human beings. Do you get what I'm saying? And for you to have anybody to prey on them and they be, you know, not protected, it's sickening. It's sickening. And I remember I told you about the one aunt that had killed her niece and nephew, had rolled around with them in her car for over years. She was carrying their bodies in the car, and this is in Baltimore. You get what I'm saying? Like, you can't make this up.
Yeah.
And then you turn right around, not even a month later, and then a mother ultimately killed her son and her daughter. Like, stabbed the son in his chest, smothered him, drowned the baby girl in the bathtub. Like people are going crazy. Like, and meanwhile, nobody's coming up with any answers. None of these politicians, nobody's coming to save us. Nobody. And it's to the point that it's, to me, I'm calling it a black holocaust, because the way we are getting murdered, the way we are dying in the streets left and right, like, this is, like, unreal and it's unacceptable, but yet we are like, okay, well, that's victim number 308, or that's like, if you end up the non-fatal shootings here in my city, that's almost up to 1,000. Like, are you kidding me? And that's cool, and nobody's doing nothing, but yet they just funded what is it called? It's called a shot spider that pretty much, you know, whenever you're supposed to hear a gunshot, you're supposed to get, a police officer and people there to respond, but that's not saving anybody's life. But yet they're spending millions of dollars into these programs, and instead of solving these unsolved homicides, it's just utterly ridiculous, unacceptable. And I'm going to throw the medical examiner's office back under the bus, because they had it seem like just on David Fowler's tenure, who he's in the hot seat allegedly for pretty much covering up for the police and in custody deaths, but yet they're still doing the same thing. Like, my sister Angela is waiting for Timothy Fleming's autopsy report. You know, this is her brother, our brother, and I always call him our brother because all these brothers, all these babies, they belong to us. These are our loved ones that are getting slaughtered in the street. Nobody's giving a damn. You get what I'm saying? So I'm ready to put boots on the ground. I'm ready to stand by all means necessary. It is what it is. Y'all not going to keep killing us, and we just keep singing kumbaya and holding up protest signs. And I literally done tried everything, down to the fact that when my brother was murdered, I reached out to Obama. At the time, he responded back to me. I done reached out to Lottie Dottie and everybody. I done turned down blood money. I done did everything. I done, you know, got threatened. I done got lied on. The worst thing, I can't explain to you all the stuff, the hellish nightmare that I'm living in, you know, and it's real. Like, it's really real. You know, and they send strong messages, but I think the only thing, honestly, that is really pretty much saving my life is the fact that I always go public with my stuff. You get what I'm saying? Like, where they want you to be quiet and don't say nothing. No, I'm saying something. When I had to literally go on my own pocketbook to have my brother's body exhumed from the ground, when you want to lie and say, oh, he had a heart attack and died from dehydration, but he was beat to death by 17. Could you imagine being beat to death by 17 all men and women? No one could survive the beat like that. And then on top of being beat, you got pepper sprayed, chased, like you were tortured in broad daylight with video footage. And to this day, we're not able to get video footage. And it's sad that we are a world now that if we don't see somebody getting slaughtered on camera, that don't mean anything. Like, are you kidding me? Like, that is terrible. But I'm ready for all the smoke. It is what it is, boots on the ground. Like, if 2020 didn't open up our eyes about who was who, we're really clear and we know who is who. Now it's just about moving forward. You know, it's about moving forward. Let it go, meaning let the people that are not doing things for us or rolling with us, bye-bye. Bye-bye by all means.
That's right.
Bye-bye.
That's right.
Bye-bye. I'm not going to regret it. You feel like, you know, that it's just sad. It's sad.
And that's the important thing, Sister Tawanda. I think that we have to reach the point now where we say, look, for those that don't want to take action or don't want to do things for whatever reason, we're going to have to deal with that based on whatever way we need to deal with that. But at the same time, focus on what we need to do and do it.
Yep.
You see, we can't spend a lot of excessive time in looking at and worrying about what somebody is or is not doing. You know, we can't keep doing it like that. All of that will be taken into consideration, but the focus has got to be on what are we going to do. Now, I just want to back up for one moment. Now, I think for Baltimore, there's 300 murders or 300 homicides, right? Is that that's the correct number?
And it's over.
Well, let me tell you about, let me share with you about Philadelphia. For Philadelphia, as of this date, 488.
You said how much?
488.
Wow. Oh, my God.
Okay.
Wow.
488. So what we're saying is this is not going to change anytime soon. So what is our plan of action? We already know. And the one thing that I find that most groups and organizations
that are supposedly addressing these kind of issues, I rarely hear them ask, where do you think these guns are coming from? How do you think these guns are getting in our community? Now, of course, some of that, you know, we kind of know and understand. But for some of it,
right.
you know, the mere fact that it's not even a question being asked. We have to look
right.
at it very seriously and understand how the programming has us looking at each other more so looking at how some of this is actually happening. And that's now got to change.
Yes, and I'm glad you said that. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but you touched on something real powerful, like where are these guns coming from? And I can tell you, I can give you that answer because I've been talking about it for years, and everybody just ignored what I said. Like, I've been talking about this thing even before my brother was killed, and people were kind of, like, frowned upon me. But then when my brother got murdered and you know, it changed my life forever and changed me into the person that you're actually seeing here now in the flesh today. But my whole point of what I'm saying was, I don't know about how they do things in your city, but we pretty much have a city. I mean, we pretty much in our city, we had something called the Gun Boys, right? And the Gun Boys here in our city would, if you turn in a weapon, if you turn in any type of
right.
gun, if they pull you up, they won't charge you. You just give them a gun and they let you go. And I'm like, are
right.
you freaking kidding me? So that tells you
wow.
right there, where were they putting them guns? And when I would go to City Hall meeting after City Hall meeting and be like, okay, what's up with these gun boys? Like, what are they doing with these guns that they're collecting? Then every now and then they would do something in the city. If you turned in a gun, you could get like $300 or $400 or whatever near the Holland. Whatever.
Right.
You get what I'm saying?
Yeah. They have it
yeah.
here. They have what do they call it? Gifts for guns and all. They give you money. They give you food. Yeah, they do that here as well. You know, again, most of what you see, they duplicated in other cities. And if you can remember, a few years ago, Chicago
mm-hmm.
was the murder capital. Remember that?
Oh, yeah.
Chicago.
Absolutely.
You see?
Yeah.
So, you know, and a few years before that, it was Washington, D.C. A few years before
yeah.
that, it was, you know, so they do this every 3 to 5 years. They switch it and it's
mm-hmm.
another city. See, again, we've got to start introducing some of our own formulas, some of our own responses to some of these things. And we're going to go more into this as we proceed because, again, we have to do some things a little differently. Most folks have organizations.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're getting ready to introduce some other concepts. And some of it is not so much as new, it's just not so present today. For example,
mm-hmm.
years ago, when black folks were feeling at least, you know, striving towards freedom, we had clubs.
Right.
Years ago, black folks had clubs, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're looking and examining the importance of that from a historical perspective. And again, I'm not
right.
going to go into the details of it right now, but introducing some other concepts in this day and age. And we're going to do that. And I think you heard me mention before, Sister Tawanda, that three of the clubs that we plan to formulate is fencing, riflery,
mm-hmm.
and archery.
Mm-hmm.
These are clubs, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And that way you're not only dealing with the recreational piece, you're dealing with the sports aspect of it. This is a different
mm-hmm.
mentality that we're introducing and putting it into our communities because there's certain elements that's got to be now demonstrated. But it also enables us to look closer at self-defense from
mm-hmm.
a disciplined manner, from a disciplined area.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the one thing that we know is that our people like money. And anybody likes
mm-hmm.
money. But when you start saying, well, listen, if you get good at this, you can get paid.
Right.
See, that's just logic. That's logic. Mm-hmm. And indeed, if a person gets good at archery or fencing or riflery, they can enter into tournaments, both local, national, and international, and get paid.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You see, these are some of the things that we've got to now look at, because we know the mindset of a lot of our people, and we've got to be smart enough to figure out how can we reach them in a way that is going to make a difference. This will also help to better protect our community. When you have a person who is disciplined in an area of self-defense, they're not going to nine times out of ten, at least our people, I'm not talking about other people, they're not going to just nine times out of ten arbitrarily try to harm you.
Right.
You see, so it just makes good sense. We have to begin to step the game up. It's just that simple. And before we go back to you, Sister Tawanda, with your thoughts and your commentary, and not that I want to harp on this point, but I got to mention it. The verdict that just took place.
But the funny, it's not funny, but you got to have humor in all this foolishness. The funny part about it is you could tell that it is just, like, so, like, written, like, we already knew, because the way everybody reacted to it, you get what I'm saying? Like, we already knew. When this judge started throwing out gun charges, most serious stuff, we already knew what was going to be followed. We already knew. When you look at the jurors and... You know, it's like you pretty much know. And then the fact that their message is so strong and clear that you can actually go to a protest, a peaceful protest, take your phone, take your junk, and start some shit because you can carry in that goddamn state. And you go, so what they're trying to do, they're actually really trying to stop and shut us down from protesting, because they're giving them the right to be like, you know what? If you don't like the Black Lives Matter, or you don't like what they say, go shoot them up. We got you in the court. The courtroom to me is just it's the Doug and Pony show at its finest. You know, it's the Doug and Pony show. It's utterly ridiculous and sad. And just like I said, there is no justice. It's just us. And once we let that sink in and start getting our own by all means necessary and sticking together, and like I love about you that you're going city to city, state to state, because at the end of the day, they try to make these things seem like they're isolated incidents, systemically happening all around. And it's wiping us out. It's wiping us out worldwide, but they'll try to make, oh, it's a Philly thing. Oh, they got 400-plus homicides. But meanwhile, we are the ones dying. You know what I mean? Then the crazy part, look at who's being killed. I guarantee you, if you was to bring your own medical doctor in there, I guarantee you each and every last person that is being slaughtered and murdered on any of these streets, whether it's in Philadelphia, whether it's in Baltimore or wherever, I guarantee you none of them are, you know, to the point that they're dying and sickly. These are healthy men, women, and children that they are murdering. It's sad to say. We have to look at, we have to be real, and I know it sounds crazy, but at this point, I don't care what sounds crazy, because the times that we're living in now where you're getting murdered inside of a church, oh, if that ain't crazy, I hush. So let me join the crazy club and kick some knowledge. And you are worth more being dead than you are worth alive, because if you break down your body parts, your eyes is worth $150,000, you know? And I really think that they are murdering us and taking our organs and doing whatever, saving a lot of folks, saving a lot of sickly folks. And, you know, a lot of Black African-American people are we're very healthy. You know, we look good, like they say, black don't crack and all that good stuff, just by our DNA. You know, it's a reason. It's not just, okay, not only they want to just wipe us out, but they wiping us out and they getting something out of the deal. And I don't care if you want your driver's license. Like, I forbid my brother, when I took him to get his driver's license all over again when he was released and things like that, and he asked me stuff. They said, do I want to donate my organs? And I say, is there a button that say hell no? for your driver's license. You know, we joked about it, but I said, no. And the crazy part, when I think about, and I won't hold you because I know you got other guests coming up, but when I think about conversations me and my brother had, really from, you know, God's perspective, that the God inside of me, when we were having conversations, and I'm like, I feel like, you know, police officers are going around getting these guys set up and wrong. There's too many people, you know, going to jail for crimes they ain't commit. I feel like, what if you got crooked officers out here that's setting people up? And then I hear about the gun tracing too. Be like, Dad, that'd be crazy. Was doing it, but this was stuff that sounded crazy. And then I'm like, what if they killing people for their organs? Because you think about when these brothers go to the jail, they're not protected by the HIPAA law. And I don't understand that,
okay.
Even though we supposed to be protected by the HIPAA law, and people can, all these people that can break into, do all this cyber stuff and break into and find information, they know who's healthy and who's not. Think about it. Are any patients that are really sick that's on dialysis are getting shot up just like that? I mean, every now and then you might get somebody that's unhealthy that get killed. But for the most part about it, with all these babies that are getting killed and females, watch it. Females, as soon as they start putting out about the transgender that was using the woman's first womb to have a baby.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes. Like, it is what it is. As soon as that happened, then now all of a sudden, oh, missing girls, watch out for the van, watch out, and they snatching it, and it's real. Like, you cannot make this stuff up. But the way the media perpetrates things is they got it designed to make it. When you see stuff like that, and you say it's only a few that really see what's going on, and those few going to be looked upon, frowned upon. Well, what do you mean a police officer going to break in somebody's house and rob? But until they see that stuff, till they get jammed up, then it's like, oh, wow, I can't believe it. Like, get out of here. This is too much. So we just got to protect us. We got to protect us. Ain't no justice. We got to protect us. So whatever which way you willing to go do this, sis, let me know. Boots on the ground. I'm ready.
Well, my sister, listen, before we let you go,
when you see Takesha.
I know that's right. I know Takesha just hit me up a few minutes ago, so I know she's tuning in. But yeah, when you called me the other morning, you said, "Yeah, you with Krista Keisha now." I said, see,
yeah,
I get it.
I'm joining y'all. I'm on a crossover with Krista Keisha. Yes.
Yeah, some of us kind of know and listen, and it's all good because it's about growth and development, and it's when you stand still that there's really the problem. You know, when you don't want to grow and develop and move forward and do things. I mean, life is a continuum. And if you're just kind of stuck and oftentimes stuck on stupid, then what do you expect? But listen, Solange, before you go, I want to take this time to finally connect you with Sister Bianca, because our brother, Justin Blake, you know, had said several weeks ago that he wanted to make sure that you connect with the group that they put together. They got a family kind of collective that's really serious about dealing with some of this, you know, not just these police murders, but the whole thing, you know, regarding that. But anyway, I want to meet, have you to meet her, and then I'm going to have both of you exchange numbers. Rita, I'm going to send you everybody's number. I'll send you her number and vice versa so that you all can connect. Again, there's a family collective of those who have been murdered by these cops. And so hold on one moment. I'm going to bring Sister Bianca in, and I want to, because again, we've been talking about getting y'all together for like a couple of months now, since August, really, when they went to D.C. For the, you know, the March on Washington. You know, they talked about wanting to meet with you then, and so I'm going to make sure that happens now. So hold on one moment. Let me bring in Sister Bianca. And then we're going to get with the conversation. Hi, Sister Bianca. We have you here.
Yes, ma'am. Good evening, Queen. How y'all doing?
Hey. Yeah, all right. All right, I wanted to take this time to introduce the two of you. As you can hear, as my sister Tawanda knows, and she's in Baltimore. And a few months back, you know, we talked to Brother Justin, and he said he definitely wanted to connect with Sister Tawanda and have you sisters to connect, of course. So I wanted to give you the opportunity to get a greetings to each other.
Yes, pleasure to meet you, my sister.
Nice meeting you.
Sorry
yes.
for your loss.
Thank you so much. And I definitely love to connect because, like I said, moving forward, and I always said this, go hard or go home. And most of the time, you know, I would try to go home and just be peaceful and, you know, saying my prayers and meditating. But now I'm ready to go hard, and I'm still going to pray because prayer
yeah.
without work is nothing. So I'm right, boots on the ground. I'm
listen,
tired of the
exactly where you're coming from.
I'm ready. I'm ready. Call me just ready. I'm ready. I called my sister. It was like 6 o'clock. It was 6 o'clock Friday morning. I'm like, sis, I don't mean to wake you up. Because once I started hearing about, the, you know, poor Miss Evelyn Player killed in a church and a 5-year-old baby, then I'm like, oh, no, wait, man. This ain't what
yeah.
you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the two of you are kindred spirits. You are definitely sisters in the struggle. And that's, again, what we wanted to highlight. You know, we want to highlight the mothers, daughters, and sisters of the movement, the real ones, the ones that really do get it. And so you two sisters definitely do. So, you know, again, I'm going to make sure that I get both of your numbers to one another. And then, you know, when you get the opportunity, you can, Sister Bianca, you can fill Sister Tawanda in on what you and other family members, and very briefly share who some of the family members are in your coalition or your collective. We like the word collective.
Well, as you know, my big brother, Jacob Blake Sr., his son was shot 7 times in the back by Kenosha police about a year ago, Jacob Blake Jr. And as you know, we have been traveling out here, you know, just fighting for justice for our families and standing in solidarity with other families. So we just decided to, you know, just make it official. We created an organization called Families United. And so we've been working with multiple families across from Kenosha to St. Louis to Delaware to Florida, Atlanta. I mean, and it's so many. And then from that, we created an organization called Justice Reform Group. And that's kind of a spinoff from Families United. So Families United is more of a self-explanatory. Families United, we unite with these families. We provide mentoring, resources, you know, try to meet them in the right direction, whether it's counseling, lawyers, so on and so forth. We also come to these cities. We help rally with them. We bring awareness. And Justice Reform Group is a group that we established that how we're going to actually get justice for these families, creating law changes in different cities. Our goal at the end of the day is to create a national police reform policy that we want to get passed through all 50 states on the same level. We also meet with organizations in different cities, NAACP, you know, the councilmen in each city, police chiefs, sheriffs, things of that nature. We host these discussion panels to see how we can move forward in passing these laws and really kind of making changes in our neighborhood so we can really push for real change. And in that group is a lifelong friend, Travis Kane of George Floyd. And we also, it's also an activist out of Minneapolis, Minnesota, his name's Cortez Wright. And he's also been doing, you know, we all boots on the ground, you know what I mean? So, we just figured what other way can we get in front of people? And we've been through these real life tragedies dealing with police brutality, that to push for these changes, you know, so, and we know firsthand what it feels like to go through these tragedies. And so we want to use our platform to be a voice for the voiceless, to, you know, because it's so many families out here that go through the same thing we go through that, you know, you would never hear about. You would never hear about. That experience the same tragedies that we're going through. And, you know, for me, I know how it felt to be alone. You know, our family felt alone. You know, we felt like here it is. You know, we put our faith in a system that we thought was supposed to work for us, mm-hmm. and then you see, like, real life how they just leave you, like, they leave you stranded. It's so many unanswered questions, and as you can see, like, plain day, like, racism is in our face. It's still there, and it's on a level, like, you know, these KKK members is actually the policemen here. And it's plain as day. The judges, they're policemen, they're judges, they're in the Senate, they're in the Congress, and they're not ashamed. And it's not right. So we are really out here. We really want to push for long-term changes, and we really want to have an impact on our community and move forward with getting, you know, not just my family justice, but other families out here justice. And, you know, like I tell people, I don't know what justice looked like for other families. And maybe along the way, what we're doing, it can help that. Just like Cameron Lamb, he was killed in his front. He was out of Kansas City. Police officer killed him within 9 seconds, getting out of his police car and confronting his man in front of him, in his own front yard, killed him. He was just indicted for the murder of Cameron Lamb. So a lot of people was focused on this Rittenhouse trial that was going on, but you know, like I tell people, I just feel like this Rittenhouse is just a distraction from what we out here really trying to do. That's white on white crime. Just like, you know, you see black on black crime every day in the news. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Every day in the news, mm-hmm. you hear about black people killing black people through gun violence, police brutality, whatever. Mm-hmm. This is nothing different. This Rittenhouse is white on white crime, and we identify that these people was out here fight on behalf of Jacob Blake Jr. We identify that. You know what I mean? Right. And we appreciate that because we appreciate all of our white allies. But this is nothing more than white-on-white crime. So I just want to tell my people, like, don't let this deteriorate you from what our main focus is. And that's justice for all of our families that have been affected through police brutality.
And so let me just share what my role is in some of this, Mr. Bianca. And by the way, before I go into that, I didn't introduce you because I just wanted to kind of introduce you to Zawana, but I like where we're at. And that's why I said to you when we had that, see, that's why I said to you when we were texting, I said, look, this program it has a life of its own. So even though there are some specific things that we'll focus on and talk about, I always like for the real and the raw to just come out. You know, I don't like that scripted programming stuff because that's not who we are. So that's why you see what happened. We've entered now into a dialogue of a certain type. It's beautiful, you see, and that's the way we like to do it. But I just want to do a sidebar because for those who don't know who Sister Bianca is, because I did not, you know, I was going to do that, but I think I need to at least let people know, you know, who you are representing when you talk about family.
My name is Bianca Austin, and I'm an aunt of Breonna Taylor. She was killed out here in Louisville, Kentucky by Louisville Metro Police. They murdered her. They shot her 9 times in her own home through a falsified police warrant. And they went to her house in the middle of the night. Mind you, Breonna was not a threat. She was not the target. They gave her 30 seconds to get decent, answer the door. Mm-hmm. Before then, they blew the door off the handles, which her boyfriend at the time, Kenneth Walker, thought that it was intruders breaking into their home. He shot one time at the intruders, thinking, not knowing that it was the police. He actually gazed him, the police, which they returned fire. And I think they killed her, left her in the hallway. They did not render her any type of medical attention. And they left her in her hallway to die. At which time, Kenneth Walker, he pled for somebody to come in and help them. He didn't know what was going on. He got placed under arrest for attempt murder on a police officer. And he actually called 911. So when 911 got there, he thought that that they was coming to render them aid. But he did not know that at the time that it was actually the police that was shooting in the apartment. So a lot of people, you know, they hear about her story, but they don't really actually know what happened. And so that's why I think it's important for me to keep telling her story and keep amplifying her name and, you know, just keep fighting for justice for her and Kenneth Walker. Because, mind you,
that's right.
You know, Kenneth Walker, he, you know, he suffered from PTSD. He suffered from manic depression. And also the officer that he shot is suing him, is currently suing him. So it's just a lot that's happening. Actually, one of the officers who, his name is Miles Cosgrove, he was one of the officers who shot blindly 16 rounds, which was two of the rounds was fatal that murdered Brianna. And he just went in front of the board to ask for his job back. We got another officer, John Mattingly, who just released a book that he's writing, or that he wrote. He's releasing a book. And so these people continue to antagonize us and, you know, just, you know, it's just so heartbreaking to know that we live in a society where there's no accountability for police who's really out here abusing their power behind the badge.
You know, this is why, again, family, it's so important that we put things in the context of history. Because if we do not do that, what will happen is we'll keep starting at a point that has us almost starting over again, you see. And so, again, and we talk about this, Sister Bianca, and we talk about it often on our program and in other forums. The Black Panther Party over 50 years ago answered the call to police and governmental terrorism. They took a stand, and as a result, developed community programs that wasn't just about defending themselves, but servicing the community. All over the country, you had thousands of children that were being fed every day, not by the government, but by Black folks 50 years ago, also given medical treatment or care in our communities nationwide. But it started from responding to police, the murders of our people, the brutality of our people by way of law enforcement. So here's my point. We've got to keep remembering and putting things in context, meaning we keep falling under the spell of they're going to do better or they're going to treat us better. We keep falling under that illusion decade after decade after seeing what they've done for 400 plus years. So then when another rash of reality pops in, then we begin to say and see, oh, this is what they're doing. Well, guess what? This is what they always did. It's just that we keep going back to sleep. You see, we forgot about the Rodney King. We forgot about so many brothers and sisters who were killed by these people.
I'm so glad you're saying that, because here it is. It's been almost, it'll be 2 years in March since Brianna been murdered, And yet, you know, the city has, you know, the city has honored her, like honoring her, doing little things like, you know, they passed the no knock warrant, you know, law here in Louisville statewide, which is great. They, you know, Spalding University honored her with honorary nursing degree. I mean, it's so many like little, you know, they give us these shiny coins, right? And we get so excited when we see shiny things. But at the end of the day, it's not any justice or accountability. It's like they give us these things and expect us to go back in our house and go back to our regular lives until it happens again. And a lot of people don't know we have a police chief here, Erica Shields. She got sworn in January, new police chief. And do you know she never addressed the tragedy in Louisville that's going on? We've reached out to this lady. You know, she's never spoken on Breonna. And it's like, how do you become a police chief and don't address some of the tragedies that's going on in your city? Like, this is nationwide, and you don't address that? You know what I mean? Like, it's just overwhelming, but this is what we're up against. So,
Yeah, but again, this is why we've got to do some other things. So even when we talk about police reform, if we don't be really innovative, creative, we will only continue to do this thing over and over. For example, what's going to make the discussion, not just the discussion, what's going to make anything any different? Meaning, we had the civil rights era, or what's known as the civil rights era, where Dr. King and others had all these discussions with Lyndon B. Johnson and the various organizations, SNCC, and they all had these conversations that we're talking about now. They all talked about police reform and all, and in some cases, you know, made some small kinds of advantages. We even saw the writing of the Civil Rights Bill in 64. My point is, these dialogues keep happening. And then for a hot minute, things will die down or settle down. And then another 10 years or so, we're right back where we started, because whatever they decided or whatever they agreed upon at that point, you know, it's okay for that time period. But then we see every single time it then just pops back up again. And this is what we were talking about earlier, Sister Bianca. 3 years ago, I don't know if you remember, but 3 years ago, Chicago was the hotbed for murder, the murder capital of the U.S., Chicago.
Yes, it was.
Now, that's right, but now between Philly and Baltimore has 300 homicides for this year. Philly has 488. Philly has 488.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, and I think Louisville's up to 183. Oh.
Yes.
And I thought was horrible.
The point that we're making is we can't keep talking about the same thing and not – I always go back to, you know, again, I don't usually quote white folks, but I always like the expression of what I always like Einstein. I always like what he referred to as a definition, or one of the definitions for insanity, which is to keep doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. And so we keep doing the same things over and over again and expecting a different result. So one of the things that I'm proposing to as you and your organization, the families, move forward, you need to sit down with and consult with people like Brother Mike, 100 Blacks in Law Enforcement, or my brother here in Philadelphia, Commissioner Sylvester Johnson. See, when you get with law enforcement people who are black first, then you can have a conversation about what needs to be done. Because they're not trying
right.
to hold no shield, at least not like that. You see, their
right.
first concern is going to be our people and then their
right.
profession.
And we,
so
this, and actually,
you,
and,
go ahead.
Sorry, I mean to cut you off.
Go ahead, sister.
And actually,
please jump in. We
just left Philadelphia, and we got an opportunity to be on a panel with one of the first black female sheriffs who's been in office of the
Stop for 1 minute. Let me tell you something. And this is why it's important that people who know history expand on some reality. I know who that is. I know all about that. I've met with her myself. I'm going to say this. Let's be real clear about something. Yes, very good, sister. However, again, we've been down that road before, down that path before, with brothers and sisters who are in law enforcement. They'll meet with you, and they'll even have a good conversation with you. And they will go to an extent. See, when you talk about the NAACP, if we don't know that after 100 years, we keep beating the same drum. And I can say this stuff, and I will, and here's why. In 99 or 2001, them years, I think 99, I got, for Philadelphia, I got the Drum Major Award from the Martin Luther King, whatever the group was, main group. I received the Drum Major Award, right? Now, the reason why I'm raising that point is because if we do not speak truth to power, sister, we will only continue to do the same thing. And I'm saying this because I'm from Philly. Trust me. I know the jokers in Philly. I know how they play. And they put black folks in office, and they'll talk a good game for a hot minute. And some of them really are sincere. However, they're not going to give up certain values, concepts, or whatever. Here's my point. Sister Tawanda Jones, that's on this line right now, refused to accept what this system said. And she took action. When they told her that her brother had drugs in his system and that he resisted arrest and all this old stuff, she said hell to the no. And she took action. So I'm going to fast forward and say this. People that I know in Philadelphia that are in law enforcement, they will only go but so far. Yes, I said it. So don't get fooled. And I don't mean there's not some good folks and they don't mean well. But I'm telling you what
right.
I know, being from Philly, they ain't going but so far. Trust me. Trust me.
And
this city will let you know. Just like they told me years ago, they told me the old girls are not going to let you do anything in this city. This is what a woman told me. The old girls are not going to let you do anything in this city. So my point is this. Unless somebody is going to come out of that comfort zone and give up their whatever, for real, then all you're doing is having a conversation and they ain't going to go so far. Mm-hmm. Lastly.
Let me
share this one thing with you to give you the proof to the pudding.
Okay.
When the bombing happened in Philadelphia in 1985, right, no police person in Philadelphia stood up. Now, I'm going to leave it at that for you. Okay?
Wow.
Except for a few,
from personal experience and how we talk about how you talk about if we can't keep beating the same drum, right? Let's just take Joe Biden for example. So here it is: we want to get Donald Trump out of office. So let me just be clear that black people put Joe Biden in office, right? And during this campaign, I had an opportunity to go to the inauguration. I was there when Kamala Harris called my sister, Tamika Palmer, sent her condolences, and said, hey, we're going to get justice for Breonna. We with you. We praying for you, sister. I was there through this whole conversation. It gave us hope, right?
Right.
That conversation gave us hope. Coming from our first black female vice president, right? So guess what? Breonna Taylor Foundation is out here campaigning, giving people rides to the polls, registering these people to vote. We put these people in office. Joe Biden and Kamala Harris is in office because of black and brown bodies, right?
Right.
And the first thing that when they do is they write an order of protection for Vietnamese and Chinese people.
That's right.
Like, what a slap in the face. If that wasn't the biggest slap in the face, and it's like, and then here it is. Now my mind is wandering. Did we vote the wrong people in office? You know, it's just like we took the opportunity thinking that we is trying to do different things. We is trying to make changes. Like, we are doing these things. And it's like every time we do something, we get shot down. We get shot down, and it's like we're back to square one. Because now I feel like Joe Biden, we voted the wrong person in office. I feel like he's just as racist as the rest of them. And he using Kamala Harris as a cover-up. I feel like he used her to get in office. That's how I feel. Because his actions is telling me that. And she's so silent. You know what I mean? Even
can
her husband said he got out.
Wait.
And so I
think
it's disappointing.
But you shouldn't be. And don't get me wrong. Yes, you should be, but you shouldn't be. That's why, again, I keep expressing and really pushing no history, know of our history, because then the disappointments will be less. You know why? See, remember, in most fields of study, of discipline, they always look at the history of something to get a better understanding of the situation. Anything that's serious, they're going to look at the history of it in order to understand and evaluate and do assessments. If we do not examine our history with these people, we will only continue to believe the nonsense. Now look at what happened with Obama. If we don't know by now, you think of Biden, here you got some man who even look like you that did what? That man literally said out of his mouth he was not for reparations. Never gave it a second thought in that manner. That told you right. Not that, well, you know, I should think about it, or, you know, let's examine it. I mean, he wasn't going to string you along a little bit. He was going to tell you straight up right out, nope, don't want it, ain't thinking about it, forget it. So I'm saying we don't pay attention to reality that's right in our face. Lastly, look at Bill Clinton. Look, Bill Clinton, they was calling him the first black president for a while, and he was running all kinds of games. And then introduced, let's strike you out. So we got to stop hallucinating, meaning we keep thinking that a leopard's going to change its spot and that a snake is not going to bite you with venom. It's not going to happen. We keep seeing this year after year. So we're such a loving people, sisters, that, you know, we just believe. But I'm saying it's now to a fault. It is now injurious. It is now detrimental that I'm not saying don't believe, because I am a strong believer. I believe stuff that most people can't even imagine. But at the same time, I'm going to take certain actions and understanding that this system is vile. And it is not my responsibility to try to fix it, not at this stage of the game.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean that I won't support certain things, but at the same time, I am not going to spend a whole lot of my time, blood, sweat, and tears trying to fix something that has 450 years of what it does to people. I'm not doing that. I'm going to put more time and energy on building what we need to build for our people. You got it.
Then we need our own black political party. How about that conversation?
Now you're talking. Just like Fannie Lou Hamer.
How do we get there?
talk about next year. And that's why I want you sisters to come together and family. We're getting ready to come to you all on the line. And we got a lot of folks that's like, let me in, let me in, let me in. So if you stay right there, we're going to start bringing some of the family in and join this conversation. But that's the direction we got to now go, having our own political party. Now going back to Sheriff Rochelle Bilal, who I met with a few weeks ago, we had her at one of our community sessions. The one thing mm-hmm. I definitely like is she did fight the system, meaning she was not the Democratic Party's selection to run for sheriff. Even though she mm-hmm. ran on the Democratic ticket, they didn't endorse her. So I like that part of it, right? But
that's to right.
demonstrate that we not only need to start our own party, we can still run our own candidate on somebody else's in somebody else's party as long as we hold the purse strings. That's where it's at. When you hold the purse strings on somebody, and that's how these politicians get caught up, because they're not using their own money; they're using the party's money. And once you use the party's money, you've got some obligations to deal with.
Mm-hmm. You're right.
So we've got to look at it in a more advanced way. One of the things that FWM is doing come March, we're having our first Black Women's Political Convention, and they're producing the Women Women Party.
You're right. And another thing we got to do is we have to get out and vote, and we have to monetize our own people. Like, you know, Black people, like, for whatever reason, we don't support, we're not in to politics and politicians, and we don't care about these things. But this is how we continue to be. This is how they continue to, you know, oppress us, keep us down.
Well, that's,
you know what
right.
I mean,
because
they've been pencil whooping us for years. You know what I mean?
Well, sister, let me tell you.
So
how do we get
our own people to say, hey, this is important.
Well,
donate $5 to your local mayors and senators who's running and councilmen. Get these people in these seats. This is where the real change is going to start.
We can't do that. No, not at all. Again, study your history. That's not how it's going to happen. And the reason why I can say that, because as a young student, I was a young student that was a member of what was known as the Black United Front. I was a college student. And what was happening then was there weren't no whole lot of city council people and that, only a few mayors. The students, just like with SNCC and other organizations, they would have us out in the field. Now, for SNCC, it was registering people. For the Black United Front, it was not only registering people, but it was also supporting the candidates that were Black all over the country. My point is this. If you do not have levels of accountability, here's what happens. And again, we have to look at history. If you vote somebody in office, for example, we voted in Wilson Good as mayor, Black man, right? The first Black mayor for Philadelphia. You want to know what his history is and what his legacy is? Dropping the first bomb or authorizing the first bomb, an incendiary bomb, in an urban environment that destroyed 50 of the 64 homes and killed 11 people. My point is this.
Oh, wow.
We can vote all the people in the world that we vote in, and they sound good because he used to be in the community before all of that. And you'll
mm-hmm.
see it in any city. With the exception of people like Achokwe Lumumba, who became mayor
mm-hmm.
and stayed Black. Again, we've got to learn from history, family. And you're right, we need to vote, but we can't vote blindly, stupidly, or unintelligently. It has
Amen.
To be people that we've groomed, not people that come with us with some butt dances or some songs.
Mm-hmm. And get in these seats and not actually be scared to, be a voice for us, take action.
Absolutely.
You're right.
Absolutely.
I completely agree. I completely agree. But as and we have, as a matter of fact, because of the tragedy of Breonna, we have locally we have a black mayor, a black female mayor who's running, Shamika Parrish, who's been she's been out here in the movement supporting us. We have a black senator who's running, Charles Booker. We have a black congressman who's running, Attica Scott, and we have another black pastor who's running, Timothy Finley. So, I mean, I can appreciate that these people have willing to step up to the plate and, you know, put themselves out there in these positions. You know what I mean? And fight for their city and take these seats. Like that to me is an accomplishment. You know what I mean? Now, whether they get in these seats and actually do what they say they're going to do, I don't know. You know, like,
but see,
you said,
that's the point I'm making.
That's
the point I'm making.
Game and we supporting them. And yeah. You're right. You're right about that.
No, we've got to do better now. For example, one of the campaigns that we're getting ready to launch, we talked about it today, we're getting ready to poll all of the black elected officials all over the country. Poll them and ask them, what is your position on reparations? See, we've got to take action prior to them getting in office. We can't vote them in and then hope for the best. How long are we going to do that? There has to be some other modes of operations. And so with that said, we've got to now be a bit more proactive.
Correct.
We've got to be. Okay. Before we start bringing the family in, because I just ran into a little glitch with my controls here, which is okay, but I'm going to get back to that in a minute, and we're going to start bringing some family in. I just want to ask everyone, how do you think, what do you think about us talking more about us having our own community securities or our own town watches, our own, you know, in other words, I hear police reform, but I'm not hearing what we can do in our own communities to better have in place in our communities the other components. You see, and I'm not hearing any of that dialogue. Go ahead.
Well, actually, you know, one of our executives on our board, Justice Reform Group, Cortez Rice, out in Minneapolis, Minnesota, who's been out here in the wake of George Floyd, putting on for his community, he's actually started his own security for his community out there. So here in Louisville, we have a group of protesters and activists who they call responders. So when they hear anything like police related or gun violence, they're first responders. Like sometimes they get there before the police. So I completely agree, and I know plenty of people who in my city and people that I'm working with that actually have taken action, and that quote unquote we save ourselves is actually taking action to secure their own community.
All right. Well, that's what we're talking about. This is what we now have to do. And Sister Wanda, are you still there?
Yes. Can I say something real fast?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. So, first of all, I want to say to Sister Bianca, my heart goes out to you and your family. I'm solely sorry and definitely, you know, been putting boots on the ground as well for Breonna Taylor. And then hearing you talk about voting these politicians and, you know, because I was a firm believer because we was the one who pretty much got Marilyn Mosby into office in our city and town. And I had to learn real quick, all skin folks are not our kin folks. And it's just saying
that's
that,
right.
You know, when you start, you got to be a conscious consumer because you got to watch out for these necropines. They will throw you under the bus and use the black agenda.
They will throw you completely
under the bus. And if you look at, like, under Obama's, you know, administration, how many, you know, laws that were passed that hurt our people. My brother was killed under Obama law. You know what I mean? And then we talk about Camilla, like she's a big joke. She prosecuted so many brothers. She sent so many brothers to jail. It wasn't even funny. You get what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And to talk about Joe Biden, oh, my God, he's a big joke. Oh, like, if you look at, like, Google him, you think I'm lying. Look at the old him. Like, when he was younger, he was the one that started the redlining. Like, I don't want them folks going to school with my brothers and sisters. Like, all this foolishness, like, it's real, but I feel you because at the end of the day, I voted too because I was like, you know what, I'm not going to step back and just leave Trump in there. But it's like we voting from one sugar honey iced tea to the next sugar honey iced tea. You know, I feel like we just got to knock it down, build it back up, and get our people in there that's going to push our agenda and keep it moving. Until then, it's the Doug and Pony show. That's why, like, I used to be down with the reform, but all that is a bunch of, it's a distraction. The biggest reform is putting these killer cops in the cell blocks. They don't want to talk about that. They don't want to talk about
Amen.
Cops.
Mm-hmm.
They just want to talk about reform.
Right.
Oh, well, let's train them on how to treat people. Well, we know that's a damn joke.
Mm-hmm.
Dylan Roof got walked
yeah.
to accountability with a burger and a bulletproof vest after killing black folks in a church. Killing ain't put,
yeah.
a, they ain't put a scratch on them. You see this white man, and that's why another thing, too, like, and I love what you said about the white-on-white crime, because I hate when they always talk about black-on-black, because that's all a bunch of, well, that's why I don't even say the black-on-black stuff, because at the end of the day, Asians kill Asians. That ain't Asian-on-Asian crime. Caucasian crime. They just do that as another way to knock the black man down and say, you know what, pull up your pants and then we'll try to get you. Like, nah. Like, what that got to do with anything? Well, we know white folks are serial killers. Let's be real. Like, so that's why I don't never talk about no black people. I call it community violence. And that's all I got to say. No, y'all, I'm right here. I had to get that off my chest. And Bianca, please make sure you get my number from your sister. Please. We definitely got to do that.
I love it. Well, all right. Oh, my gosh, listen, family. And for some interesting reason, I just, again, lost the board. It seemed like something does not want us to have this conversation, but we're going to try. Just give me a few more minutes, family. I know that. Everybody, I've got so many people in the boards, but every time I try to bring people in on my computer, it goes blank, kind of. So what I need for you sisters to do is just talk like a few more minutes while I try to get reset up again. I had to reboot my computer to try to get folks on board. But let me also just kind of raise this question, and then I see Brother Mike is in queue. Haven't talked to Brother Mike in a long time, but it's going to take me a few minutes to they've gotten my screen blocked for a minute, but I know how to undo that, so just bear with me for a few minutes with that. But listen, while I have both of you here, what is happening right now, my sister Bianca, in terms of, you know, I know that there had the hearing and all of that. Is there anything that you can share with us at this point in terms of, you know, just what's going on with the case? Has everything been resolved, or are you at liberty to share any information about any of that?
Well, I know it's just a very difficult situation. As far as Breonna cases goes, her lawyer, Lanita Baker, Sam Aguiar, has been fighting effortlessly. It's a continuous ongoing investigation. They are continuously finding new evidence and exposing new footages, new videos. Yes, that's taking place. So it's definitely an ongoing investigation. As far as her case goes, and we just praying to God that we can gather up enough to take this to the House and get them to, on the federal level, to get Tom Wine, Daniel Cameron to do their job and plead a case for her, because what Daniel Cameron did, he took this and did not present any charges for officers to be charged on Breonna Taylor's behalf. So basically, when he went in front, he, you know, her neighbors and the walls got justice, but he never presented any charges on Breonna Taylor's behalf. So that's why none of the officers in her case was being charged. So it's just back to square one, building up her case. And like I said, these officers who is involved is continuing to entice us, antagonize us, like they don't care. You know what I mean? So, and they know they protect it. So it's just fighting against a system that we know is just not working for us. Kenneth Walker is currently, he has filed civil suit against Louisville Metro Police Department, but he is also getting sued by Brent Hankinson, the police officer that he grazed with a bullet, that lied and stated that he hit a major artery and he almost lost his life. That was a total.
Let me just share with you, and then I finally got my boards back. So, family, we're getting ready to come to you. Let me share with you again why we have formulated the movement for Black human rights, okay, because, again, that's never happened before. There's never been a movement that specifically focuses on Black human rights. See, again, I agree with Einstein. If you keep doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result, then good luck with that. So we're introducing at least a few things that are somewhat different. And so one of the things with what we call the formula we use, we call it ARA, the letter ARA, the number 4, the letter J. And again, this is to introduce other elements into these dialogues. So when you or others talk about, well, this is what we need to do in our community, we are presenting formulas. For example, you mentioned, and I'm so glad you did, because a lot of people didn't know that, you know, these people were not really charged with specific violations. That has to be understood. So no, and we also know that they are exempt. Many of them, based on their contract and they can't be charged with certain things in certain states, in certain situations. That's something else that people need to understand. So with our Black human rights, which takes you to a higher level of justice, or at least supposedly, we're introducing this area that most are not even, they definitely ain't talking about it, and most ain't even thinking about it, and it's this. You clear reparations, which is what people are talking about, and we should. You also hear restitution, which is another application of getting compensation, but it can be applied more to things like corporations as opposed to governments. The part that we bring in is called retribution. So while most talk about reparations or restitution, and we should because it's a part of the justice piece or what we call reparatory justice, we introduce retribution, which is an area in law. And what it specifically focuses on, punishment. Retributionary law focuses on punishment. So what we're saying is that has to be applied to these cops, that they need to be punished under a human rights aspect. That's a different argument. You see what I'm saying? We've got to think out the box now. And there is an area in law called retributionary law.
Right.
So we've got to
like for the officers,
other dynamics. Sure.
Yes, we've got rap sheets. Some of these officers have rap sheets
that's
of complaints. That's still able to serve
as an officer out on the streets. I don't understand it.
That's right.
And still have qualified immunity, meaning they can work, they can retire and still get paid.
That's right.
And benefit.
Well, listen. You sisters stay right there. My voice is back up, and we're going to bring in somebody who can kind of give us some insight because he's the co-founder of 100 Blacks in Law Enforcement. We haven't had him with us in a while, but we're certainly happy to have him with us tonight. All the way live, all the way black. Big Mike, Brother Mike Graves is in the house. Hey, Brother Mike.
Hey, how are you, Sister Empress?
Oh, I'm good, my brother, and yourself.
Yes, I had to just call in. I was fixated on listening when I heard so many things, the passion coming from Sister Tawanda, and I did speak to her recently, and I just could not believe the level of information. I just, again, said, well, there goes the war correspondent, because nobody can accumulate that level of information and then give it to you in the form that she does, where it just impacts on you so much. And I was just compelled to call in. Just want to say to her, just even though I don't have to say it, but stay strong, sis. Stay strong in what you're doing, you know, because I just can't believe that level of commitment that you have after all of these years, and you still as fiery as you were before, with all the backbiting and betrayals that I know you've gone through, because there's always going to be people with you in the beginning, and when you turn around one day, they're not going to be there. And unfortunately, in some situations, as you go further down the road, you're going to be going against them because they were with other people all along. So you find that. And that's just part of our history. We have to be a little more sophisticated. Nothing is going to change unless you have an element in place that can put the opposition in jail. And obviously, we don't control the jail system. We don't control the courts. So we have to have a mechanism that has an inside strategy and an outside strategy. Of course, we've always demonstrated from the outside, but how many district attorneys do we have that's going to prosecute for us, that belong to us, that we put in office? Right. We don't have the mayors. We don't have mayors that we control that came out of our community. We have some black mayors that have been selected by them, not by us.
Right.
And they look the part, but they're not going to do what we want them to do. They know who buttered their bread, and that's who they rolling with. Anytime you in any city, anywhere, and there's a lot of a police abuse, and you see them put in a black chief, female chief especially, you just know that everything is going down the tubes. The worst black women you want to see is in law enforcement. The worst. When the abuse get really, really bad, they just start looking for a black woman to put in. Because she fills the bill as a woman, she fills the bill as black, and you are going to be sold down the tube. It is just so disgraceful. Now, that goes for the one in Louisville, and it goes for the one, whether it was D.C. and so many other places. It's just, I mean, you might as well just go bury yourself when you see a black woman coming as a police chief. I mean,
Brother Mike, wait a minute. Don't miss Philly now, because you know we have our first black female police commissioner.
No doubt. And so I'm just saying, if we don't control our internal politics, I know for the most part, 99% of us are wedded to the Democratic Party.
Mm-hmm.
I understand that. I understand the history. I understand what coming out of slavery with the Republican Party, which was a benefit at that time. So, you know, mm-hmm. we went with the party of Lincoln, you know, because some of us think Lincoln freed us. We don't know we freed ourselves because that history is not short. So obviously, but the party that was in when we freed ourselves was the Republican Party, which we stayed mm-hmm. with for about 50, 60 years. And that started changing under FDR. And obviously by the time that Kennedy came around, which was another 30 mm-hmm. years later, after that it was all over. We were strictly Democrat. And unfortunately, we carried a Democratic banner before we carry a banner as Africans. And that's very unfortunate that we don't prioritize the black anymore. You get the most prominent names in the Democratic Party that are black. They're Democrats first. They're not going to go to war with Biden. They're not going to fight Biden, and that includes Kamala Harris, who hates black men. So, as a matter of fact, she has never called herself black until recently. Right. When she was asked while she was running, at one point we have to remember she was running for president. When she ran for president, they asked her, is she a proud black woman? She said that she was a proud American. That was her answer. So she avoided that black stuff.
Right.
And we just somehow glossed over that. She is now she used her supposed black skin as a way to garner votes and garner money, which went into the Democratic coffers. Mm-hmm. And Biden specifically said, as a U.S. senator, as one of the leading U.S. senators, he made that crystal clear when asked about schools and the whole thing of public schools and blacks going to school with whites. He said it clear that he does not want big black, overgrown black children sitting next to white girls.
That's what he made
that crystal clear. And that's always been his politics. So what has changed? So Biden now, as somebody pointed out, the first thing he did when he got in is that not only did he take care of with respect to immigration, but he also did a thing with Asians. Talked about, you know, Asian hate groups and all that stuff. I mean, are you kidding? The only one that hate Asians is white folks.
Right.
Because they hate people. They hate black people, Native Americans. They hate Latinos. You know, they hate everybody that ain't white. They hate themselves, but they just ain't going to admit it. So they have been at war with us for too long, and we've been trying to do everything under the sun to endear ourselves to them. And it's just unfortunate. If we don't control the court system, and you just saw what happened with Rittenhouse. Here, every law in the book that you can imagine was broken, and the judge threw out any hopes. He didn't even want a discussion on the gun charge itself.
Hey,
you got a 17-year-old that carried an assault rifle across state lines to kill people, and he did that, and they didn't even take that into consideration. He is a part of a white supremacist organization or organization, and he was defending white cops that shoot black people. That's when he went to test was against a black man being shot and paralyzed by a white cop. So he went there to support white cops who kill black people. So when he was caught on the scene after firing his assault rifle, killing two white people, wounding a third, the police told him, get out of here. If you go back to the tape, he actually had his gun on his shoulder, walking by a police officer who told him, get out. They right. knew he just shot people
yeah.
and told him to get out because he was defending them.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't come out in court. I'm just saying that if we don't control our situation and we continue to depend on the NAACP and organizations like that, and yet the very organization that stood against white supremacy and white people crushed them, whether it was the Black Panther Party, Republican New Africa, and so many other organizations, SNCC and all of them, we still stick with the actual organization that survived these police onslaughts are the organizations that they've supported. See, we don't want to admit that the 112-year history of NAACP, they survived that long because it's white finance. The Black Panther Party don't have that long history. SNCC and all of them don't have that long history because they have been severely crushed by white supremacy. Whether that's in the form of the courts and putting people in jail, whether that's physically shooting them down in the streets, every type of coercive instrument one can use, white supremacy does use. And Kamala is the perfect example of that. Obama is another example of that. Obama, with all the things that he did or didn't do, the thing that's glaring to me is that he had the temerity to go to Michigan and take a glass of water and drink it in front of Black people saying, stop complaining, the water's fine. And he knew that water was dirty and it was brown. And he said it was fine. So when people say, well, it's limited the amount of things that he can do, well, damn it, you ain't got to tell Black people to drink water that ain't no damn good. Now, he had the opportunity to use his Justice Department to put people in jail. He didn't put one white person in jail in 8 years. Not one. The most he said about white supremacist attacks on Black people is that he said, what's his name could have been his son?
Trayvon Martin.
Trayvon. He said Trayvon could have been his son. Now, he really believes that that's enough that he can do that and he can sing Amazing Grace and Black people just fall in love with him again. He sang that in the church after the nine people were killed in Charleston, South Carolina. He went there and sang a damn song of a white slave owner that sold Black people. So it's just, you know, we can't keep playing with ourselves. We either got to be serious or just move out of the way for people that are serious.
There you go.
We have more Black elected officials now than we've ever had. We have more now. The number is in the thousands. We got mayors. We got controllers, we have city council people, we got state senators, we even got some a couple of U.S. senators ain't worth 2 cents. None of them. Cynthia McKinney is better than anybody we got in office anywhere. And they ran her out of office because she stood against the state of Israel and some other things that she did as a Black woman, as a proud Black woman, and Black people don't even mention her name. Kamala can't shine Cynthia McKinney's shoes, and they know it. But we just quiet. I'll just say that Cynthia McKinney is the best elected official we had since Adam Clayton Powell. There's nobody even close, and she ain't in office. They ran out of office. Wow. Democrats and Republicans said she's too much. The same way Democrats and Republicans went after Adam Clayton Powell. They did the same thing to Cynthia McKinney. And the reason why you got all these prominent Democrats, the number 3 and 4 position in the House right now, is because they just remain silent and do nothing. And they sit to this day, the Congressional Black Caucus says that we should have a discussion on reparations. They ain't saying we should have reparations, but we should have a study of it. You know, after 400 years, we still studying the and yet we come in, look at all of us. We the whitest of white and the darkest of black. Every color, every flower in the garden, we look, and yet ain't no black, ain't no white men been accused of rape nowhere, and yet we just saying we gonna study it. A black woman been getting raped 400 years before Tawana Brawley and since Tawana Brawley, and white men don't go to jail for rape. And we wonder why are we in this situation. Well, if we was in another country, if we was in South Africa during the time where they was really fighting for their freedom, where we would have dealt with each other a whole different way. And I ain't got to go into that now, but all y'all know what I'm talking about.
Absolutely.
You deal first with the collaborators, because you can't fight who's in front of you when the people behind you are stabbing you in the back, so you deal with them collaborators. If we ever dealt with collaborators, it would be less of us, but we would be much stronger. And I'll end with that.
All right.
All right, family. We were just talking with Brother Mike Graves, of course, Community Cop and 100 Blacks and Law Enforcement. And see, that's the kind of representation that we have got to be able to connect to, you know, because it has to be of a certain mindset. So, Brother Mike, as usual, thank you much. Again, thank you for the recent Community Cop link that you sent out so families can, of course, check out Brother Mike on Community Cop, him and others. Just go to YouTube and you can kind of see all of the episodes of Community Cop. Again, just go to YouTube and you will be able to get a plethora of information. And that puts it mildly. Thanks, Brother Mike. Okay, we have one more caller before we close out for tonight. Family, we've been talking with Sister Bianca, and of course she's Taylor, and of course our own sister, warrior queen, Tawana Jones. And so we're going to take one more call for tonight. And caller, you are at 9498. Your mic is now open. Welcome to the segment of the day.
Hello, Sister Filet. How you feel?
Hey, Brother Ray. How's my brother?
Okay. Thanks, Brother Mike. Thank you to Wanda. Keep fighting a good fight as... I was wondering how they, as Darren was talking about, how did they allow that lady to go to that church that early in the morning when you had so many men members?
Exactly.
And... as a member of the congregation, why did they let her go there that early? So there's a lot of stuff he was bringing out. I picked up this book, The Manufacturing of a President, the CIA Insertion of Barack Obama into the White House. So that's another one. But the fight is still on. I hope they don't still throw a whole lot of money at Breonna Taylor's organization to get people to vote. And we had a black independent party in New York, and the Democratic Party sent some flunkies in there and squashed it. Mike was a member of it, Sister Keisha. So we just do what we got to do and keep on fighting the good fight and, you know, hope for the best, but you don't stand up for something, you'll fall for anything. So,
that's that right.
Sister Tawanda, that right. drug trade in Baltimore is ridiculous.
Uh-huh.
And
yeah.
It's coming in through them ports down there along with them guns.
Mm-hmm.
So it's coming in through the ports and the guns and we just stay strong and keep doing what we're doing, and that's what we do. Of course, it's a fight, and it's a fight for the.
That's right.
It's a fight to the death, along with this scamdemic. I was at a rally today. I was at a rally today, and the Proud Boys was there on 65th Street in Central Park West. The COVID rally, they had their flags, and they marched all the way down to the Supreme Court in Foley Square. So whatever it is, it's going down.
That's right. Well, that's like always go back to what we going to do. And Brother Ray Ray, I want to talk with you again to get the link for the recording for your lecture this past week, because I definitely want to check that out.
The Irritated Genie was excellent, family, due to some problems with his live streaming. He had problems with it, but we had an excellent time. It was good, and it will be put on War on the Horizon, his website. I'll keep you posted, and you could actually get it directly from, you could get the DVD, and you'll be able to get it directly from his webpage to your computer. But he's going to put it on, but it was magnificent, and we're in the process of trying to bring in Dr. Randy Short. Hopefully we could pull that through. But it was good. And the lecture was magnificent. So the fight is on. And, be careful voting for all these Boule. Be careful voting for all these Boule Negroids. The Boule is in full effect, and the sororities and all these different institutions is in full effect, and they people was right there. So be careful.
Absolutely.
Be very careful.
I like to call brother.
Darren says they co-op you and then they cold drop you.
Yes.
Okay, thank you very much. Thanks, Big Mike, and thanks, Keisha, and thanks, Sister Filet, because you don't have to come on, and Sister Tawanda didn't have to do what she did, but she believed in something in her heart, and Sister Filet and Blog Talk and Community Cop and Thorough Black Talk and Mackey's, we don't have to do it. We're trying our best, and you don't have to come on at 10:30 every Saturday. You could be doing other things, but this is in your blood.
That's
and if
right.
it wasn't in
Got
your blood,
right.
you wouldn't do it.
That's
if it
right.
wasn't in our
no
blood, we wouldn't
it.
Do it, because we could just say later for it and go on and
right. like
bend over, you know, and bend over and let them keep, and we keep bending over for them like them flunky individuals are doing right now. Because once you bend over one time for them, they want to come back in an hour and tell you to bend over again. They love it. So thank you very much. And you don't have to do it, Sister Filet. You don't have to do Blog Talk, and you do.
Yeah, you know
you
I
do
know.
It every Saturday night and all the other programs and all the people from Philly and all over. We just keep rolling, and that's why they're so scared of us.
Yep.
Okay.
All right. Well, it's
Thank
all with
victory.
That's for sure.
Right.
Thank you, my brother.
Okay. All right.
All right. We got two more callers real quick. We're going to come to caller at 0978. Welcome to the segment of New Day.
Hello, Empress Chi and other queens on the phone. This is Brother General Parker out of Illinois.
What's going on?
Oh, hanging in there, trying to make a difference. Yeah, just a couple of things I want to say real quick. You know, I've been listening to the sisters, and I want them to know that my heart goes out to them. And I've tried to be involved in a lot of those situations. I met Sabrina Fulton, which was Trayvon Martin's mom, you know, through our group, the Coalition of Black Trade Unionists, about 9 or 10 years ago. I met with the parents of Michael Brown, but we held a rally for them in St. Louis 2 years later. Last year, I was up in Kenosha. Not Kenosha, I went to Milwaukee after what happened in Kenosha. Mm-hmm. So there was a rally there. And Chairman Fred and I were there for that rally. And I try to get involved in these issues because they're very near and dear to my heart, you know. So, like I said, my heart goes out to them. Anything I can do, any connections I have or whatever I can do, don't hesitate to reach out to me. But it's a couple of things I need to get straight real quick, especially with this Biden-Harris thing. You know, the very first thing Biden did when he got in was sign that bill about hate against the transgenders first. I think he did that the first day he got in. Then he went and signed that bill for the Asian hate bill, you know. And about 2 days ago, he just signed about another bill about public safety and social equity for Native Americans. And doing all this stuff, and the George Floyd bill is still sitting on his desk, you know. All this stuff is just sitting around when it comes to black folks. And if that ain't a slap in the face, I don't know what we need to wake up, you know. They do everything for everybody else, but the minute you say something about doing something for black folks, having a bill for black folks, reparations for black folks, you got people like Obama and the rest of them, oh, I'm not the president for just black folks. I got to be the president for everybody.
Right.
But they don't say that when they're doing things for everybody else, you know.
That's right.
So,
absolutely.
And also, a couple of weeks ago, Biden made an executive order paying $450,000 to these immigrants that it came over illegally and was separated from their kids. What are they going to do about all our families were separated from our families through slavery and through CPS and everything else that's still going on today?
That's right. That's right,
Joe. So, I mean, I don't know how many times you got to keep getting slapped in the face and keep running back to your so-called savior, you know, but the Democratic Party ain't it. That ain't being worried about Trump. That's basically what they call domestic violence. When you keep getting beat up and run back to your abuser, that's domestic violence we committing on ourselves, you know.
Yeah.
So, we do have a black party, you know. Even though I don't believe in this system of voting, we do have a black party, and it's called the Mahali Party, and they're located mostly down south right now. But the reason I don't believe in it, and I don't believe that we can vote in this system, because this system was made specifically to keep us down and oppress us. So I don't think being a part of this system is going to help us. We have to totally dismantle this system. So voting black people in the office is not going to help us, because most of those people and the law enforcement officers, your attorney generals and everybody else that we elect and put in place, they're not so concerned with helping us dismantle this system of white supremacy as they are with improving their position in it. See?
That's right.
So
absolutely.
Don't get surprised when you get in there and they don't do nothing, because they just worried about making sure that they look like, I ain't like the rest of them niggas, boss. I was a good nigga, okay?
Right.
They're not
right.
going to help you dismantle that system. And they're not going to let you put nobody in there that they think will dismantle it. So
that's right.
And
we have perfect examples of those who was trying to help our people. They didn't last long. The majority of them got either assassinated or died mysteriously. You know, we have a few examples. Like I said, Baba Chokwe Lumumba was excellent. Of course, he ended up dying from a heart attack or some stuff. Same thing, Harold Washington. And a few others, but the ones that do try to do something, they either get, you know, messed up in the system, like Marion Barry, because from what I was told, he really was a good brother. You know, everybody got some other issues going on, but he definitely, you know, used that office to help black folks, to a great extent. So, you know, so absolutely, we can learn to play the game. And what I mean by that is, you know, I don't believe in this system or its politics. But what I do know is, you know, being here, I've got to learn how to play the game. We've got to learn how to play the game. And so, you know, that is our intent. And also go back to what you just said
General Parker. I'm just going to say this, and I'm going to leave it alone. See, what I've learned, and I know about the Parker that you mentioned, is that we had him on our radio program. But see, a lot of our people don't deal with, a lot of our people don't deal with reciprocity. That's right. I'm going to say it. They will want support from you, but they won't give you none.
There you go.
I'm going to leave it at that.
Yeah.
See, what we do here at New Day is we try to make sure that we will at least provide information. We provide information. We give people a platform to share their information, to share their campaigns, or whatever. Sister Tawanda created for us $2 Tuesday, as you know, because you've been a wonderful supporter for us.
Like I told you, we have a black party, but I also said after that that I don't believe in voting in this system, see, and they want to be a part of this system, see, so.
Yeah, but I'm saying, you know, I can deal with a strategy. I always look at things very closely before I say, no, I might not do that, but the 360 degrees. So I might not do or want to do all 360 degrees, but that don't mean it's not relevant or shouldn't be done. So I always look at it like that. But then I look at this. Who's trying to do stuff that's independent, that's self-determined? And if you can't try to support that, then I have to question what you really are about. And if not me, somebody.
There you go. There you go.
See, that's what I'm saying. And this is.
And I got one other thing to say. Sister, I was in Detroit last month.
And, I'm in Detroit now.
Well, I was there
right
last
now.
Month. And the people in Detroit, well, I'm in Chicago right now. The people in Detroit had took a vote a couple of years ago. It took a vote to for self-determination. Over 100,000 people showed up and voted.
I know. We did a report on it.
To get rid of it.
Yep, we did a report.
Right. So I was there with that brother. And so they showed up on the 14th to start passing out deeds to homes. Okay, because they didn't believe that, well, they believed that they are the true government, the people's government. That's what they call themselves, Detroit People Government. And that's their website, DetroitPeopleGovernment.org. But I put the brother on Facebook Live on my Urban Intellectual channel. And the police had came in right when I was interviewing him, and they were trying to tell him he had to stop doing what he's doing. Or else that he's going to be arrested. They're going to be a warrant for his arrest. And he starts spitting out constitutional rights, the city charter, the state constitution, and international law. They came and they put their tail between their legs and they ran. I put that on our Urban Intellectual channel. Like I said, it was Facebook Live. And within about 12 hours, we had over 1 million views. 3 days later, had over 5 million views on that and over 74,000 likes and I think 34,000 shares and 10,000 comments, you know.
So
he was passing. He said there's no way that the city of Detroit can hold 100,000 vacant homes in a land bank, and we got 40,000. Homeless people. We giving these homes out to the people because that's an international right.
And that's something similar to what we're doing in Philly. But see, I'm not going to put myself or the people that I work with in a position of a certain type when you know you don't have that kind of support to back you up. Because I've learned from experience, you go out there too quickly. At some point, unless you got the kind of support system, backup, whatever. What you going to do when they come for you? Anyway, that's a whole other matter.
All right.
But I know who the brother is. We talked before previously. Again, I've always allowed people to bring their platform and position to our program. I don't get that same kind of reciprocation. And so, you know, with that said, you know, I deal with it accordingly. I'm in Detroit right now and have spoken with, you know, some of the people that have been doing reparations work here in Detroit for years. I'm in Chicago tomorrow, as a matter of fact. We'll be with Chairman Fred tomorrow, and also Brother Justin Blake will be at the Soul Vegetarian Restaurant tomorrow starting at 5 o'clock. Again, that group that's having us there, they've done stuff, you know, at the United Nations and so forth over the past, you know, 30, 40 years. And one of the few groups that have maintained a black-owned restaurant for 45 years.
Right.
So again, you know, we connect with people who have not only done the work but have been consistent in doing
right.
the work. But again, that's tomorrow, family. Again, if you're in the Chicago area, we will be over at Soul Vegetarian Restaurant starting at 5 o'clock and building our movement for Black human rights. Last week we did have a brief session with Franz Fanon's daughter, Muriel, and Sister Muriel, and got some kind of insight into some of the things that we are looking at doing. Again, we're taking our time and doing it anyway, where we can generate support from the masses of the people by going to them directly with education, information, and boots on the ground. I mean, the average person won't even know what genocide or human rights or any of that is. So we're taking the time to go into our communities to educate the masses of our people one-on-one, all right, so that we know when the time comes and we're ready to make moves, we can, you know, pretty much get the kind of support that is necessary. Next year, we'll hold our first pre-plebiscite session. It will allow our people to have a voice in, say, for example, what do we want to call ourselves? We've never voted on that. At any rate, thank you, General Parker. Hopefully, if you're still in Chicago tomorrow, I'll see you. And, you know,
I'm
going to
try my best.
With you. Okay.
Well, okay,
we'll
then.
All right, family, listen. We're going to get ready to close this session out. We've got one more caller, and then we're going to wrap it up. And, caller, you are the last caller for tonight. And, again, we remember, family, we still have Sister Tawanda with us and also Sister Bianca. And we're going to close out with you, caller, at 1559. 1559, your mic is open. Welcome to the second of the new day.
Good evening or good morning, Dr. Filet. It's Sister Keisha calling in from Brooklyn.
Hey. All right.
I was listening to the program, and first of all, Sister Tawanda, you already know what it is.
So, I'm ready, sis. Got the boots on.
You already know what it is. And
that's
you know,
right.
To you and Sister Bianca, you know, just keep the fight. Keep the fight.
That's right.
And I just want to say to Sister Bianca, you know, it's critical that you really take in what all of the callers have said and all of the information that Dr. Filet has given you, because I want you all to be victorious in your fight. And in order mm-hmm. to do that, you have to be cautious of political entities that we do not produce, create, or finance. The Democratic mm-hmm. Party is nothing but a legalized criminal operation. It has always been that way. And it invests trillions of dollars into itself so that white supremacy maintains itself. It controls media, it controls labor, it controls law, and it controls a social order. So we have to be very, very careful in dealing with these entities. As Brother Ray Ray said, we had our own political party here in New York, the Freedom Party, and that was sabotaged by the Democratic Party. As Ray Ray said, they had their tentacles who were able to step in and, you know, cause a division within the Freedom Party to dismantle the Freedom Party. It is how it mm-hmm. operates. It is a criminal operation. And we are going against an entity, like I said, that has trillions of dollars to maintain itself. So just... you know, keep the fight on, and, you know, you have partners in this. You know, Sister Tawanda mm-hmm. is a great example and a way for you to connect with entities like New Day Liberation, myself, and Thorough Black Talk Radio and others mm-hmm. to make sure that your story and your fight stays in the foreground. for black people across this country. We are living in killing fields. This is not, these are not states, these are not cities, these are not counties, these are killing fields. And they have always been that way since they kidnapped us from the continent of Africa and forced us into indentured servitude and slavery. And so we have to understand how this dynamic works. We have to do some things that are very different from what we are used to seeing. And as I've said here and many times before, we have to have some serious closed-door meetings to do things that will disrupt the economic structure that upholds the Democratic Party. You have to dismantle it. You ever notice that none of these so-called activists, from Tamika Mallory to Al Sharpton and anybody else, ever, ever demand that we boycott one particular business? Could you imagine what it would look like if we was to dismantle Target or Walmart or Amazon? Nothing of this sort is ever spoken about, and nothing is ever said about us defending ourselves. We are up against enemy combatants, and we have to know how to deal with them. As Mike said in the beginning of, you know, his commentary, that unless we deal with these snakes that are amongst us, we are going to continue to fight an uphill battle. We have to deal with people who are not working in our interest. They have to be shut down completely. When you look at the political spectrum, when people are campaigning, there are commercials, there is campaigning in the streets, they come to your houses of worship, which is another crime within itself. But they do these things to get you riled up to vote for them and get them in office so that they can do the bidding for other people. The only entity that has never campaigned for are the judgeships, because it is the judgeships that maintain the structural order of this country that keep us in line. And if they can't keep us in line, they will put us behind bars or deputize people like a Kyle Rittenhouse who could come out and shoot you. Now, I've been warning people about the Proud Boys for many years, right here in New York City, that they've been here. So I'm glad that Brother Ray Ray brought that out when he was at a rally earlier today, that he was able to identify that. You have to know how to identify these entities. And, of course, I'm going to say this before I close out, we have to be forceful by any means necessary with those who work, look like us but work against us. Case in point, when we shut down the Red Apple Nail Salon here in Brooklyn, that Asian store owner and his employees beat the mess out of a black woman and her grandmother. And so in order for us to shut down that entity, we had to show up and show out. Now, you had a lot of black women in Brooklyn, I got to get my nails done. They all right with me. So, you can't go in there. We shutting this down. And it became quite argumentative. And we let them know, we can't stop you from going inside, but when you come out, we're going to beat the hell out of you. Now, you can go in and get your nails done. When you come out, be prepared to get your eyes busted when you come out. And so, you dealing with people from the streets, and so it went a certain way. But we came there with real brothers and real sisters from the street to let them know, I don't care who you call. I don't care what you do. We're going to beat your ass when you come out of this damn nail salon. Now, however way you want to deal with it, deal with it. But I bet you they ain't going to that nail salon. And we were out there for months, for over 2 months we were out there, letting the community know and any politicians that they thought they were going to send down there, don't come down here unless you're ready to get this work, because we're not playing with you. Because right now,
wow,
we outnumber the police officers that are patrolling out here right now. So by the time they call for backup, they're going to get their head busted too. It is what it is. So we have to deal with these people in a manner that is appropriate for their actions. Period. It's about life and death. We cannot continue to breed generations into this world and lead them into this chaos and wonder why our children don't respect us the way they should. We are not holding a standard for them. There has to be accountability also for wrongdoing. I don't care how much black power talk Charles Barron may do. He has to account for what he's done with the Freedom Party. I don't forgive easily. No damn body.
Mm-hmm.
I don't forgive nobody. You have to atone for what you've done. Stop letting bad behavior slide. That cannot work anymore. Because our babies are looking at us. And they're watching us. And the world is moving on. Technology is moving in a way, sister, that will divide us even further if we don't grab hold of this. So that's why some of the things that we do on Thorough Black Talk, you know, it's three of us, but individually we have things going on to help bridge that gap now, because I'm telling you, what you see in technology now, and as Brother Parker, General Parker said, and I'm a follower of Urban Intellectuals, but as he said, you know, his posting reached 1 million views and had over 700,000 likes and things of this nature. What Facebook itself is about to do with this meta universe that they are creating, it's going to divide us even further if we don't grab hold to technology and our people and take hold of our fight. We don't have to talk or speak politically correct to any damn politician or any damn police chief or anybody else. Why? Because we are victims. And we have a right to plead our own cause and speak our own truth. I don't have to be politically correct. If I want to call you a goddamn cracker, that's what you are. Because that's what you've proven yourself to be to me. If I want to call you a Negro pen, that's what you are.
That's
right. And I can back up everything that I say. And they understand this, Dr. Filet. You know, and what really brought this home for me is when I had a meeting with a African dignitary at the time.
Mm-hmm.
To know that these people were actually watching what I'm doing, and not only watching what I'm doing, but loving what I'm doing and wanting to work with me, I'm like, who do these people know about me? First of all, why are you requesting me? And then understand when I have those entities that I spoke about a few minutes ago reach out to me as well and offer me millions of dollars to walk away from us?
That's right.
To offer Brother Tad millions of dollars to walk away from us? We're doing the right thing.
That's right.
We're doing the right thing. I've been poor. Hell, I'm still poor.
Yep.
I don't give a damn. I don't, because when I leave this world and when we all out of here, I got advocates on the other side. You got to ask yourself these questions. Who is your advocate on the other side? Because this world, the way we see it now, I'm telling you, in 5 years or less, it's about to change to another dynamic. Technology-wise, we aren't ready. We have to get ready. So there's a lot of things that have to be done, and I love you all. And Sister Bianca, please continue to fight. My condolences always to you and your family. You know that you got people here in Brooklyn that are championing your cause. And if you should ever need anything, you reach out to us and we got you. The real ones out here. Not these fake ones.
That's right.
The real ones.
Yes,
you
got
you. Yes.
Thank you. That's much
with
appreciated.
That, I'll say y'all, you know, good night or good morning. And y'all be well and stay safe out here.
You see you doing the same thing.
Thank you, Sister Keisha. Yeah, like we said, family, you can tell who the real ones are, and that is our position and that is our point.
I love it.
Continue to support one another.
Great
point,
though.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And it's a growing process, you know. I mean, it's like I tell people, like, you know, I tell people that sometimes I hear people say, "Oh, I'm not going to march anymore," or "I'm not going to do this anymore," and I'm like, "That's fine, but don't discourage someone
don't
else.
Discourage
don't
somebody
try
else
to
from doing
tell
it.
Somebody else not to, because how did you
right.
get to where you at? You had
right.
you participated in some of that as a part of your growth and development. So
okay, yeah,
but you know, you might not want to do certain things or shouldn't, but understand that there's a process. So I'm saying that to you, Sister Bianca, that because there's a process of growth and development. We all didn't, most of us didn't come in conscious or ready or whatever. We had to get to that point. But I can tell you right now that folks better be getting to that point real soon, because this system, like Sister Keisha just said, this system is moving rapidly in what they want to do and how they want to do it. The only thing that I am very cognizant of now about social media is that, you know, to get people to like you or to put likes and all of that on you or your Facebook and all that, that's a good thing. And a lot of good information can be circulated and matriculated. But what, in most cases, and again, Million Woman March did something like none other in a time period where there was no social media for the most part. There was no Facebook. The Internet was not being utilized. And we were able to galvanize 2.5 million people. Now, that took a whole nother kind of insight. And I'm not saying that to utilize social media is not important. It is. But this is what I know. Most of what I see and have seen, it's not sustainable. And I learned the hard way. If you do not organize and operate in a certain kind of manner, encompass it all. But be real clear that certain things are designed only for the thrill of it all, or if not for the thrill, for the moment. So you have to deal with planning in a manner that is protracted. Now, of course, those of us that are on this line, we do that. But I'm just saying, generally speaking, we have to understand that social media, for the most part, also designed to dismantle a natural flow. And I'm not suggesting that, you know, we should not, could not utilize and should use every technological aspect that we can. But at the same time, you better know them fundamentals. That's for sure. Because when they shut that bad boy down, you better know how to utilize some other kind of realities and energies. And this is what I tell people, you know, get all of that and know all of that, but know the roots of organizing, of operating from a premise that ain't got nothing. Your Harriet Tubman didn't use no Internet. Okay.
Right.
And by the way, we're getting ready to commemorate her journey to freedom in a couple of weeks. But my point is, you know, there's a science to certain things, and we must not ever forget that or trade that in for anything, because that is the spirit of resistance, and they can't duplicate that. They cannot duplicate it. They want to, and that's why they utilize Black Lives Matter and all these other people, you know. I got a group here in Philly that's having a meeting tomorrow, and they're talking about peace and the drug, peace and the guns and all of that. And they ain't even looked at the history of one of the groups that's involved who literally was endorsing Ronald Reagan.
Wow.
Years ago. So this is what people do. They wait things out. They wait for a generation to kind of pass, and then they resurface again. If not themselves, they, you know, they have their family members or something. And then they run the same game on you all over again.
because people don't take the time to observe, to analyze, and then to really you know, put the pieces together.
Do their homework.
So right here tomorrow in Philly, they're having a big rally about peace and guns and all of that. And the same group that got millions of dollars years ago is a part of that thing tomorrow. But the people who are really serious or want to do it, they don't even know.
Wow.
They don't even know. Because they don't do their homework.
They're doing it for the cameras to get the likes.
No, see, it's a hodgepodge of things. There's some people that really are genuine, but they just don't have the other pieces to really put it together and to really come out with a conclusion that makes sense. They mean well. And see, this is, again, what them does. It knows that our people, many of our people really do mean well. I mean, you got the shysters and the sellouts and the backstabbers, but then you got some that really mean well. And the system exploits them knowing that they don't know. They don't know the truth.
Exactly.
So the system will exploit you, pat you on the back, embrace you, give you a kiss, and all of that, all along knowing that it ain't going nowhere because you really don't know the fundamentals, and they're not going to help you to know that, you see. So it's a lot to really grasp. And again, I applaud you and Sister Tawanda because you were kind of forced into something. Some of us made a conscious decision, you know, for whatever reason. Like Brother Ray Ray said, it's in our blood. Because, see, I was always a bad child, as they said. At 5 years old, they said I was going to be a problem. My mom had me in Catholic school. They kicked me out in first grade.
Not you.
Some of us
were
always bad children.
That.
Oh, yeah. Some of us were always bad children, as they said. but my point is, you know, some had to go through a certain other kind of process and you know, to some realizations or some understandings. And you and Sister Tawanda, unfortunately, were introduced to those areas of coming into an awareness. And again, you know, like Sister Keisha, Brother Mike, and Brother Ray Ray, you know, we appreciate you both, you know, very, very much because, you know, there are some who, you know, got into the situation, and after they got what they needed to get, they kept it moving.
Right.
You
understand? I always tell people, like, this is a new lifestyle for me. You know, it's a learning experience.
There you go.
It's transitioning. You know what I mean? Like, I need to accept this transition in my life and the new position that the Lord has put me in. So,
there you go.
Definitely. My ears is, you know, ringing from, you know, all the advice and people who called in, and, you know, you put things into perspective and it makes your mind just, you know, take a turn, and you're sitting here writing down notes and, you know what I mean, and comparing notes. So it definitely was an eye-opener, and it's things that's always going to keep me humble, and it just just to know that, like, I'm doing the right thing and I'm headed in the right direction. And how people that's real out here really do support you.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? Even though you don't see
those
people, you don't get opportunity to talk to those people, that, you know, like, this is what it's all about, you know. So it's much appreciated.
Well, you are definitely deserving of it, and you're welcome. And again, I'm going to make sure I text you Sister Tawanda's number, and Sister Tawanda, I'm going to text you Sister Bianca's number, because the two of you, I just said, the two
absolutely
of you, y'all know something else. I can tell.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, then. We are going to close out, and since we started off with Sister Tawanda for tonight's program, we're going to close out with her. Sister Tawanda, you got the last words for tonight, or close to the last words. So give us your closing comments for tonight.
I just want to say, we more than hashtags and body bags. We have nothing
Amen.
To lose but our pain on fighting. Keep the good fight alive.
Absolutely.
That's a good $2 Tuesday.
All right, now,
And again, family, I mean, we appreciate any donation. So you can use our Cash App. Of course, it's $HOT1111. Again, $HOT1111. We also have a PayPal account. And website. Oh, okay. NBHRproject@gmail.com. That's our power. PayPal and the Cash App again is $HOT1111. All right, family. One last thing. Our website is almost finished, but you can go there and get some good information. We have other stuff that's getting ready to come. For the We Charge Genocide 21, just go to WCG21.com. Again, the first national summit next year for 2022 will be in Washington, D.C., but it will also feature a pre-plebiscite session. So if any of you are in any cities that want to form a delegation for the pre-plebiscite session, now is the time to do so. Your delegation will be representing your community, your organization, and so forth. The questions that will be provided, you will be the ones to vote on those questions or to give commentary or response to those questions and also introduce others. For example, what should we call ourselves? At some point, we have to be represented as a body or, as is said, an entity. In order to do business, it's just like anything else. We can't be a one person. It has to be an entity. We have to make that decision on what do we who are striving for justice under the banner of black human rights, what do we want to call ourselves? That has to be determined. So it's things like that. And again, we're open for suggestions. Okay, it's not me saying it. It's what you all and others that are similar and like minds are saying. We want to know your suggestions. So we'll talk more about that the next time. Again, tomorrow we'll be in Chicago, in Detroit now. Tomorrow we'll be in Chicago. We'll be at the Soul Vegetarian Restaurant. It's been in existence for 45 years, y'all. 45 years. We'll be there tomorrow in Chicago. Chairman Fred Hampton Jr., Brother Justin Blake will be there with us. And we're going to break this thing up, break it down for you. If people don't know what human rights is, what genocide is, and the things that are connected to that, you're going to know now because we're going to take it to the people. All right, family, we're going to leave you as we oftentimes greet you in the spirit of Maud and Hotep. But remember, there could never be any real peace until there's truly justice. And y'all know what we say, Sister Wanda, there's no justice, there's no what?
Ain't no peace.
Ain't no peace. All right, family. Again, we love you all. We thank you all. And as the Honorable Marcus Garvey taught us, we will see you in the whirlwind. And guess what? Mm-hmm. The whirlwind is here, at least one of them. Until next time, promote your Shinda. Together, we shall win. Tutanana. Love y'all.
Love you back.
Yeah.